Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Fighting against injustice across Connecticut, Melissa in the Morning checks in with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities on WICC 600.
I am so pleased to be speaking this morning with human rights attorney for the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. Michael Roberts is here. Michael, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. First of all, I want to talk about just generally what protections are in place for our transgender population here in Connecticut.
Sure. Connecticut has some really broad protections against discrimination based on gender identity and expression. We have protections in employment, housing, and public accommodations, but we also have protections in areas like state services, state facilities, as well as interactions with police and in schools.
What are some of the most common cases, would you say, that you cover when it comes to this population? You know, to me, I think it's crazy, honestly, that we still, you know, have come so far as a society, but we have to put protections in place. I think last week we were talking about how they're trying to pass an act that tells you don't discriminate against people based on their hairstyles. Like, to me, I think it's ludicrous that we have to put laws in place not to judge people. And the same, honestly, I feel goes for gender identity and sexual orientation. Like, you know, hire someone based on what they bring to the table, not who they go home to every night. I think it's crazy to me, but I understand why we need the protections. It just makes me sad that we need them. But what would you say are the most common issues that our transgender population faces here in Connecticut?
Well, based on the cases that we see, some of the broadest and most common ones are in employment, in housing, and in schools. A lot of times folks just maybe are trying to do the right thing but not quite handling it very well, and sometimes they're handling it really poorly in terms of how to address somebody, you know, somebody that, who comes out at work. Maybe they've worked with somebody for a long time, and then that person makes it known that they are identifying a different way, using a different name. And, you know, at first, maybe there's a bit of time in which folks can try to get used to it. But after a certain period of time, or if somebody is really making it clear that they don't want to respect their coworker's gender identity, then it starts to become a problem. And that's a lot of times what we see in the cases that come to us.
Wow. I mean, I will say, Michael, and please, and I want to be transparent with you. I certainly want to be open-minded. I know that you're new to our show. I try to put myself in the same position. I don't try to act like I don't struggle with certain things, like my audience in some way does as well. So I really hope I'm not coming off insensitive. I'm curious, you know, as you talk about people who present, you know, hey, I feel like I was born somebody different, or I'm going through this transition, or I don't relate to this gender title, and they make this announcement. In your professional opinion, though, I'm curious, like, is it okay for an employee, for a colleague, for somebody to feel an initial, I'm going to use the word disappointment, when you hear about something like this? And the reason I ask is because oftentimes, like, my friends who have children will hope and pray that they're having a girl or something like that. I'm just giving an example. And then they find out they're having a boy. And they almost quiet themselves from feeling disappointed. But in my mind, I think it's okay if you made plans in your mind and then they just don't work out that way, but you've got to move forward. But I don't know if people address the fact that it's okay to be initially, like, shocked, taken aback, or disappointed. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly, I think whenever there's a change that happens, especially when you have in your mind kind of the person that you are relating to, and especially the longer that relationship goes back, you know, you have in your mind, you know, here's this person that I know, and here's my relationship to them, be it a coworker, but also be it a family member. Mm-hmm. And then that person comes to you and tells you something that could potentially have a change in the nature of that relationship a little bit. You know, you, especially if it's something like somebody's, you know, a fundamental aspect of somebody's identity, like their gender identity, you know, it's going to take some getting used to. You're going to have to kind of get to know that person and that side of that person a little more. And so in that kind of a moment, it can feel a little like there's a loss of the person that you knew, but at the same time, you know, there's the kind of joy that goes along with getting to know that person's real authentic self, and the new person that is being introduced to you. It's the same person, but you know, some aspect of them that until then they might not have known themselves, or that mm-hmm. they might not have been comfortable sharing.
I love that the way that you just put that, especially because if you truly to the core love that person, you know, you're going to adjust and you're going to be fine. And you're going to, like you said, look forward to learning this new aspect of them. And I love that. We're talking this morning with Michael Roberts. He's a human rights attorney for the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. Last week, Michael, there was a national story, Hasbro, which I'm sure you heard about, came out with the fact that Mr. Potato Head is no longer going to be Mr. or Mrs. It is now gender neutral, and the branding and the logo just says Potato Head on it. One of the biggest reasons for that was so it could feel more inclusive for gender neutral populations, transgender populations. I'm curious, though, because I know, if I'm being honest with you, I'm a huge Toy Story fan. My son is as well. I grew up where you know this iconic character for decades, and then it felt like his title was taken away from him. Do you feel like as a society we overcorrect sometimes? Like, I know we need to focus for very good reason on correcting our discrimination, our judgment. It's ridiculous. But I'm curious, like, in this situation, why not create new icons? Why not set a tone where we are addressing the fact that, hey, we haven't done enough, so let's create more to bring inclusivity? Was this the right move, in your professional opinion?
Well, certainly, you know, a lot of different brands and different situations are going through a reassessment. Mm-hmm. You know, we see it in brands like Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben that are kind of changing some of the their kind of historic logos and the ways that they've referred to themselves, because they're kind of taking another look based on some of the new conversations that are being had. And, you know, with a brand that is so iconic as the Potato Head brand, you know, why not start with a brand that is so iconic and that can send such a signal about inclusivity by taking that particular step and making kind of that commitment? Then it certainly sends a signal that other brands, other companies and folks can model.
And I want to stress again that my question is not meant to be close-minded or a bigot answer, or I should say a statement I'm saying. But do you ever worry that because we are now catering, I don't even know if that's the right word, but we're focusing so much on making things right for one community or one population that, you know, so for example, with the Potato Head brand, and I'm just using it as an example because it's the most recent, but, you know, okay, so now we've created something that a population is feeling like, all right, awesome. This is representing us. This is what I'm like, this is what I'm known for. And I feel like I have an icon to look up to. But now you have other children who have known this character for so many years, and sort of back to your initial point, feel like, wait, hold on. So what happened there? You know, like what happened there? And, you know, this character who was known as a great husband and, you know, adopted father to three aliens. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but for some kids, it's feeling like, OK, so are we jerks for thinking this is a guy? Does it make sense what I'm asking? Like, you know, do we focus so much on one population that another population now either gets looked at as being wrong or like, is that kind of a worry that we're going in a direction where we're pushing inclusivity so much, which sounds crazy to say because we should be including people, but that a population that knows a certain way is being looked at now as being jerks is the best way I could put it.
Well, I think that we all benefit from a culture of inclusivity, a culture mm-hmm. that kind of welcomes folks and allows people to identify, you know, in terms of their gender identity and be open about it and feel like they can be included regardless of what their gender identity, their sexual orientation, their race, their religion may be. Mm-hmm. I think kids have a tremendous ability to understand, you know, folks and be able to accept folks from different walks of life. I think a lot of us would do well to look to the example of our kids in the way that they don't yet have a lot of those
like those prejudgments.
Notions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that you know, for kids who are growing up right now, I think this is going to be a great way to kind of at least put on their radar that there may be room for a lot of people, regardless of what their gender is. And then for others of us, again, it's like, you know, not to minimize the conversations that are happening among people every day, but it's that same kind of idea of having to take something that we might have known for a long time and have been familiar with, and start to realize that maybe there's a little more to it than we might have known before, and that mm-hmm. that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Human rights attorney Michael Roberts, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right. So Connecticut Senate is in session today. And who better to chat with this morning than the majority leader of our Senate representing the state's 25th district? That's Senator Bob Duff. And Senator Duff, thanks for coming back on the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm glad that you're back here, especially because pretty big week that we're kicking off here in Connecticut. First of all, there was a public hearing last Friday in regards to legalizing marijuana. What came out of that?
Well, I think what came out of that was the fact that there still needs work to be done on various pieces of legislation that's out there. Looks like the Judiciary Committee, which has the a lot of the jurisdiction on this, has the governor's bill. There's another bill out there in the Labor Committee, and there's a lot of people with ideas and people who want a seat at the table as we discuss this very important piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like, Senator Duff, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the biggest problems, it seems like, with legalizing recreational marijuana from people who are opposed to the bill is the fact that at this point we still don't really have a concrete way for police to test if someone is high behind the wheel. Were there any alternatives that came out before this bill, you know, goes into voting?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. This is not a, it's not a perfect science for sure, though mm-hmm. the technology is changing. And I think that there's movement to work to try and track those things. But don't forget, the state police or the Department of Emergency Services Public Protection did come out in favor of the legislation of the governor's bill last week, and which is kind of a marked change. But let's not fool ourselves also in the fact that legalizing recreational cannabis or marijuana does not bring in marijuana into the state. It's here already. Mm-hmm. We have an underground market right now, black market, where anybody is able to go purchase it, and it doesn't, people can go, go a mile or two or a few houses down and probably be able to get access to marijuana. And we can go in Massachusetts and other states around us to get it and purchase it legally. So Connecticut has a question to answer. Are we going to be able to control our own destiny from a policy perspective, or are we going to just continue kind of in the same place that we've been for decades, one of which has this, black market, and the fact that now we have other states legalizing around us, are we going to have their policies dictate to us, basically? So those are some of the questions that we have to answer on top of the fact of, do we want to have this legalized in Connecticut? How do we deal with the issues of equity? And how do we make sure that we keep marijuana away from our younger people?
Yeah, I think that the latter part of your statement, I think, is the other big thing that people are opposed to, because it sounds like, Senator Duff, the other thing besides police being able to monitor or track and be able to have something that holds up in court against someone who's high behind the wheel, the other thing that seemed to be a big concern was drug trafficking. Now, I happen to be in support of marijuana legalization, not because I smoke marijuana, but because to me, I agree with you. I think it is full-fledged here. I think we are wasting money by dumping it into other states and bringing it back here. But I do understand the concern, especially for a younger market. How are we sort of addressing the idea of drug trafficking and kind of keeping it out of the hands of our younger generation?
Well, it's like what we did with our medical marijuana industry. We've legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes many years ago under former Governor Malloy. Connecticut was held up as a model around the country as how to do it correctly. Mm-hmm. So I think we can do the same thing with recreational cannabis as well. But keep in mind, again, Connecticut's a small state. We're not like Texas, where if you're in the center of Texas, you know, take you days to get someplace else. If to purchase something out of state, Connecticut, you can go a couple hours and you're in Massachusetts from here and back, and you can purchase it. So I think the other question then comes down to, I don't support homegrown legalized marijuana. I think that, and if you look at other states, that has become an issue that has made legalization kind of an issue that makes it a little less easy to control. Mm. So those are some of the kinds of things we have to deal with. And again, we have it now on the black market. We have younger people, unfortunately, who are using marijuana, which then many times is laced with fentanyl, or mm-hmm. could be laced with other types of chemicals in mm-hmm. it. If you have legalization, you can, again, not allow people over under a certain age to be able to have access to it, like we do with medical marijuana. You can then, you're able then to regulate it better, and people can then understand what they're purchasing. So the legalization of recreational cannabis does not give some sort of a green light to our youth or to anyone who's under, say, 21 or 25. But it does allow us to be able to hopefully knock the legs out of the black market, the illegal black market, and be able to regulate it in a way that creates a safer society.
But the other question there, Senator Duff, is, if we make it where it's easier to access it here, doesn't that just prompt the question if that's going to be easier then for it to be in the hands of more kids?
Well, again, that's why, if you were to, the polling all shows that a majority of people in the state of Connecticut are for legalization of recreational cannabis. And so it's a simple question, right? Either you're for it or you're against it. Mm-hmm. The devil's always in the details of it. And that's why I think that we haven't seen it be voted on over the years in the state of Connecticut, is because a lot of times the weight of the details is what bogs everything down and makes the policy a lot more difficult, because that's a legitimate question that has to be answered. And so I think as we go through the legislative session, we will work to, and the proponents of the bill, the main sponsors of the bill, will work to answer some of those questions to ensure that we do everything possible to not send any kind of a signal brings or has our youth think that this is now something that we want them or are encouraging them to do.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, I know that the Senate is in session today, and another big item, a big ticket item is what I'm going to call it, that was discussed in length for a 24-hour public hearing that went on were the religious exemptions for childhood vaccinations. Is that, looking like it's going to pass as is, which it looks like? You're talking about, I think it's kindergarten to like middle schoolers would basically not be able to get the religious exemption, but at a certain age up to high school, they would be grandfathered in. I believe I have that legislation somewhat right. So I'm not sure if you could clarify it for us and if you think it'll pass as is.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we're still, let me just start this way. Making sure that our children have the proper vaccinations and don't unnecessarily use a non-medical exemption, or also known as a religious exemption, is very important to ensure that we have healthy schools and safe schools. The current legislation right now, I believe, would have some sort of a grandfathering effect to children up to the seventh grade, and then after that, kids in middle school after seventh grade, eighth grade and above, kids would immediately have to make sure they were current on their vaccinations. And so, again, we're in the middle of a pandemic right now. Making sure that we're keeping people healthy and safe is really the primary goal of any government, whether it's local, state, or federal government. And we did hear for 24 hours from a group of people who are a very vocal minority in our state who are anti-vaccination and anti-vax. And so, and they have a lot of misinformation. I certainly feel for some who have experienced issues with their children in various ways. But again, if there's they're putting other children at risk by not immunizing their own children, and they're also putting children at risk who are, have their own immunocompromised, who are also immunocompromised because some children cannot get the vaccination. And those decisions are really left best left between parents and their doctors for those medical exemptions. So I think it's important that we pass legislation that removes non-medical exemptions and that we continue to make our state healthy and safe. The last point I just want to make on that, Melissa, is that we've seen over the years where vaccination rates have dropped because people are using the religious exemptions or non-medical exemptions. And we've then seen outbreaks of measles, and we have people now who say that they're hosting measles parties. And measles can be a deadly disease, and we don't want to see the recurrence of measles or polio or mumps or any of these types of things that we thought long ago had been eradicated or at least under control. And we don't want to see, resurgence of something like polio. And so, that's why it's so important for us to fight against the misinformation, fight against this kind of anti-vax conspiracy information that's out there, fight for what we believe is right, and fight for the health and safety of our communities.
So, Senator Duff, there were a couple things in there. First of all, you brought up twice misinformation. I mean, what are people misinformed about who are against getting their children vaccinated?
Well, the scientific community has, because of the advances made by vaccinations, has literally saved millions of lives around the world. And there's misinformation regarding the safety and efficacy of these vaccinations. There's some people who say that if you just have some sunshine and some vitamin E, that's all you need to ensure that you're not going to get measles or that you won't get the coronavirus. And so, there's just a lot of misinformation that's out on the internet that's, been shared on Facebook that is not in any way, shape, or form science-based, but yet looks very convincing.
The other thing, too, though, Senator, which I always get kind of misconceptions about this, the idea of if you don't vaccinate your child, it affects other kids. So, like, if my kid is vaccinated and somebody in his classroom is not, my kid is still protected, is my understanding. Like, he's all set. It's really the kid who's not vaccinated or, like you said, someone who's immunocompromised who, could end up being in quarantine or going home or get sick. Like, it's really just for your own child who doesn't get vaccinated, who it seems like is going to be the one impacted, not really the classroom. If everybody has their vaccine and your kid's the only one who doesn't, it sounds like it's more of just you're keeping your kid from being able to go to school. Isn't that more accurate than it'll get other kids sick?
I don't agree with that totally, because there is the herd immunity, and we need to make sure that we are keeping the numbers up to where the scientific community says we need to have herd immunity. And by having more and more parents utilize these non-medical exemptions, that's bringing down the numbers of children who are actually vaccinated, which does threaten herd immunity. So it's more than just I have my child vaccinated, so he or she is fine. By having more children who are not vaccinated, that puts at risk the kids who are immunocompromised, and that puts at risk the entire classroom, say, because of the fact that you're now enabling a virus to spread in a way that it had never been able to spread before, or have a reemergence or recurrence of a virus. So, I listen to the scientific community on these things. I listen to the medical professionals, and the medical professionals are saying that because of the fact that more and more parents are utilizing exercising a non-medical exemption. They're therefore putting not only their own children at risk, they're putting entire communities at risk. And we've seen that in New York and California and other places when parents are not immunizing their children, and we're seeing this recurrence of measles and other viruses outbreaks, which we had not had in decades.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Duff, last question before I let you go. I appreciate the extra time this morning. Is there anything being discussed about if, in fact, it really is a religious exemption? Because I do agree to an extent that people have used that excuse without any proof to get their kids out of getting vaccinated. You know, oh, my kid hates getting shots. It hurts for them. They don't want to get them, whatever the case. And they use religious exemption. Is there anything in the legislation right now that's offering a compromise, like where, you know, the two religions that really, truly do believe that you should not get vaccinated, they could get like a letter signed by their leader of their, I don't know what the religions are, but, you know, like their religious leaders who say, hey, this person is a member of our congregation, for example, we do not believe in this. We have, you know, if they want to be members of our religion, this is what we believe in. Like, is that exemption possibly being debated?
Well, the exemptions right now are for medical exemptions. That's in the bill, to have medical exemptions. And again, you're doing this based on science and health. You're doing this based on what's between doctors and parents and what's best for the child.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where we need to keep our eye on the ball. And I'm not aware of any major religion that advocates for not vaccinating
their children. Oh, I thought there were two.
Okay.
I thought that I don't know. I could be wrong. I thought that came out of the public hearing that there were two.
I'm not aware of any. There's actually a great op-ed that was in the Hearst papers from a rabbi who wrote about why it's important for parents to vaccinate their children. And I think we all agree that religions say you should vaccinate your children to make your kids healthy and to keep our communities healthy. And that's what's important.
Okay. Well, Senator Duff, I really appreciate you taking the extra time this morning talking about these two really big topics. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again next week.
Okay. I look forward to it. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
Senator Wong, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Good morning on a Monday and hoping for warmer spring weather.
Yes, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Now, I know the Senate is in session today, and on Friday, there was a public hearing for marijuana. What came out of that?
Well, it was a interesting public hearing at best, and in fact, the critics surprisingly spoke out from all different angles. One such perspective were from urban and progressive legislators that actually supported legalization but don't think that the governor's proposal does enough on
There's some
social
gaps.
Equity. When we say social equity, it means opportunities and economic benefits for a population that they felt were significantly impacted disparately by past laws. Another faction was obviously the public health and safety issue, talking about we got all the police chiefs that came out and said that there was a real concern on public safety in regards to DUI testing, which
sure.
none exists.
Yep.
And obviously you've got cognitive and public health critics coming out and saying the brain development capabilities and the challenges of young people under the influence of a narcotic, and then the possibility of gateway addiction in the environment that we have relative to opiates and substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And another area that was interesting was from a lot of large employers. For example, our national defense contractors like Sikorsky, Electric Boat,
right.
Pratt & Whitney talked about because this substance, marijuana, is still considered a controlled narcotic under federal law, the national requirements of employment and public national security requires that people get tested and they not be under the influence. And
right.
so that creates another huge burden to address. So the critics came from all sides, Melissa.
That's interesting.
And what's interesting to me, being a policy person, is the fact that, you know, this was worthy of a debate, but you got transparency and you've got all the shareholders approaching different areas of agreement or disagreement, that doesn't always happen in
no.
all the bills we consider.
Yeah, and we had an idea that this was not going to maybe pass on first hand because there did seem to be not complete, like, oh, because the governor wants this, all the Democrats want it either. There did seem to be like, okay, well, we want this, but it can't pass as is. Does it seem that way, that it can't pass the way it's being written?
Absolutely. Even the governor's staff admitted to it. They spent 5 hours defending the governor's proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the governor proposed, and he worked hard on getting a working group to evaluate all the different viewpoints. But on a policy basis, Melissa, my point is that, you know, because the Democratic legislators had challenges in question, mm-hmm. we had a true, transparent conversation about how to make legislation better. I just
great.
Wish we had that same respect and consideration for all of our bills that we talk about. And so, you know, one of the examples is my frustration continues on the public health option bill.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was hearing rumblings that the GOP alternative plan could get a public hearing again soon. Is that true or no?
It could. And we've been working hard with coming up with solutions based upon the testimony and the collaboration of various shareholders and getting mm-hmm. viewpoints how to make it better.
Yeah.
But I will share with you, we've had almost 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks since the public hearing, and I've had no interactions with the proponent of the public option bill. I've had no discussions from the leadership, the chairmanship. I'm a ranking member. Of how to make this bill better based upon feedback that we have.
Right.
Again, that's troubling for me, is the fact that the points that were raised out from the standpoint of customer information,
sure,
and transparency of whether the partnership program, the public option that we're modeling after, is potentially losing money. The other aspect about accountability, the fact that, you know, people potentially with adverse conditions, meaning that pre-existing conditions, could be selected out of the public option plan,
mm-hmm.
is deeply troubling.
And even the details of, like, the coverage, like, we don't even know how many deals are being offered. What does the coverage look like? There's still gaps. And you're saying that 2.5 weeks later, we still haven't addressed those gaps?
We have not. I can honestly say to you that as the ranking member on that committee, I have not had any interaction or input from the majority leader party to discuss how to make a bill better. We've always offered solutions, not simply saying no. And it's troubling to me the fact that dissenting viewpoints, how we can make a bill better, by the example I just shared with you on the marijuana legislation, whether you agree with it or not, the fact is the approach that we're taking on the public health insurance option discussion is a deep concern to me. That are we being railroaded a plan that says it's as good as promised and maybe overpromised, just like we did with the Affordable Care Act?
But even the Democrats have admitted, like, we had Senator Duff on last week, who said every one of those points you just mentioned, customer service, amount of coverage, what our coverage actually looks like, what do our insurance plans actually look like under the public health option? Every one of those points, he said, well, we're working on that. Well, we have to look at that. So my question to you, Senator, is do you believe we're nearing towards where enough time goes by, enough has elapsed, and people sort of are more focused on other things that we just pass a bill that actually could be detrimental to our state?
I certainly hope not, and as long as I am in the Senate and as a ranking member on the Insurance Committee, I will not allow that to happen. That being said, the fact is, if we're working on something, I, as the ranking member, don't know of it.
That's concerning.
And we would love to come to the table to have a conversation. And regardless, I am going to push for a public hearing
mm-hmm.
for vetting the alternatives that we've been working on.
Right.
And it's important to note, if this is not a partisan issue on this, Melissa. The Connecticut Business and Industry Association, the largest representative body of small, mid-size, and large corporations and businesses in the state of Connecticut, has publicly come out and challenged the transparency and the opportunity to be able to provide alternative plans to the one that's currently proposed. And I'm really glad, because this is not a Democrat or Republican talking about this. These are about the various businesses whose livelihoods are going to be impacted.
Mm-hmm.
We've got consumer group, consumer advocates, Ellen Andrews of the Connecticut Health Policy, well-respected, have come out and said, look, this plan doesn't work.
Right. Like, it's not all bad, but it's certainly broken as is. And I'm hoping that you continue to make noise about this, Senator Wong. And thank you for talking to us about it this morning. I really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. And it's, you know, it's an honor to work in the General Assembly. But unfortunately, sometimes sunshine needs to be raised on the lack of process. And it's very frustrating. And the only people that lose on this are the people that we represent.
Yeah, which is really scary. Senator Wong, thank you so much. We'll talk more about this next week.
Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you. We check in now with our marriage consultant, Bob Donovan. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Doing great. Doing great today, Melissa. Thanks so much.
Of course. So, great topic today. Why some marriages do really well and flourish while others struggle. It's a pretty broad question, but I mean, you got an answer for us. Why is it that some do really well, you know, 40, 50, 60 years, and then some, you know, maybe even a year or two or 20 years later, just we call it quits?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a question that's kind of driven me for like 15 years trying to understand this more. And what I tend to do when I get stuck with a question is I go to experts. That's what I do. I either read or go online and try to find out somebody that's explored this. A guy named John Gottman, Dr. John Gottman, runs the Gottman Institute. He's been doing this for 40 years. He's studied thousands of couples, and he's kind of landed on basically something pretty simple. I mean, it's probably simple, but difficult to do. But basically, he said it takes intention and it takes an attitude to be more concerned about your spouse than yourself.
Mm.
And he's listed six things that you can do to do that. So, again, none of these are hard to do.
Well, I want to know all six of them. I'm only about 4.5 years in, and I want to make sure that I don't get divorced. So what do you have for us?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the first one is to show interest in what your spouse is interested in.
Oh, my gosh, so true.
Yeah. And now, so it's true. Easy. Now, you guys are fairly similar. You like doing similar things.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. This is kind of more natural to you. Karen and I, not so much. You know, I love sports. I play tennis. I play golf. I'm like kayak and big time outdoors. And just Karen's not physically able to do that. So, you know, we've had to like work at this. We plan intense. She loves going for walks. So we plan on going for walks in different places. Karen loves to shop and browse. I don't, but I make sure that we go to the outlets or whatever, and I just relax, get a coffee and watch people. So you see, finding a common show,
mm-hmm.
Something simple. Like I love watching golf in the wintertime on a Sunday afternoon. Love it. Right. So my wife feels like I'm like missing out on something because I'm mm-hmm. watching TV on a Sunday afternoon. So
right.
Simple things. Right. But it's an attitude.
True.
An attitude.
That's very true. Yeah. Now, what about, I love this one because, you know, I feel like it kind of relates a little bit, showing that you care.
Mm. Yeah. So, again, this is, so you have to, like, look at what's going on right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on right now? It's a lot of stress, work at home, school at home, right? There's probably more stress on marriages and couples now than ever before.
Totally.
So
mm-hmm.
what we tend to do is what? Go back to what I need. I'm working hard. I'm doing this. I'm working 10 hours a day. I'm taking care of the kids. Exactly. And when you do that, right, you do that. It's natural. You do that. You tend to like what I'm not getting
mm-hmm.
versus what I can give.
Mm-hmm.
So just an attitude of how can I just step back and just show more concern what my wife's dealing with than what I'm dealing with. It's an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I tell you, most women who are working, and I'm like you, that are working with mom, never feel they're doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
You could be killing it at work, killing it at home, whatever, doing all that, and you never feel like you're doing enough. So
right. Yep.
I just mm-hmm. say, men, you know, we just got to be a little bit more intentional about showing and concern for our spouses. We really do.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Bob Donovan, who's our marriage counselor here on the morning show. And, you know, I think it obviously goes both ways, Bob, just kind of finding ways that, you know, and it sort of relates to the five love languages, I would think. That's a good way of showing you care a little bit. And what about your appreciation on a regular basis, not just when you do amazing things, like every day showing it?
Yeah, it actually is an easy one. This is one of these, like, an easy thing to do that has high impact. But we kind of revert back to, like, what I need or what I'm not getting. But if we just went through each day, just find one thing, just one thing today that you can thank your husband or wife for. And if you started just doing that, that has power. And it's easy to do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, my wife recently just had a birthday. And so I just planned a surprise dinner with one of her closest friends. And she loved it. She loved it. She thanked me for days about that. So, you know, it's an attitude of gratitude. That's what it is.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, number four, being accepting, I would imagine, is just literally knowing that the good, the bad, the ugly, that's who you married. You got to accept it.
Yeah. So this is a little tricky one. So, you know, as you know, because you went through our pre-marriage class.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we put couples through a pre-marriage assessment. And there's a one question on this assessment I find really intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I am hoping that after marriage, my future spouse will change some of his or her behavior.
This is what made Derek and I break at your class. This is what made us cry. No, seriously, it did. That's what made us cry. It was unbelievable. After being together almost a decade, that's what broke us. It was like, whoa. It's crazy.
You really, mm-hmm. you landed on that? You did, huh?
Yeah, of course you did, because you are so surface with your spouse. And I think sometimes we have these like thoughts of what we think is going to happen. Like there's this magic switch. And then you find out that, first of all, that person's like, oh, thanks for letting me know that. I had no idea. But also there are things that like, those are things that are just not going to change. Like certain things that we were looking at in our future marriage, it was like, well, hold on, then you probably should marry someone different.
it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful question that basically mm-hmm. the underlying meaning here is like, what are areas that you want to change your spouse about?
Yeah. It's crazy.
And boy, if you're going to marriage like that. And that's why even married couples, if there's some underlying stuff going on, like, so one thing, so it's accepting kind of these habits that we all have. But I will say, if there's something that does need addressing, some unhealthy behavior, mm-hmm. what I'm not saying that you have to accept that. That needs to be addressed. So
yes.
This is just accepting just the little things that annoy each other daily in a marriage.
You know, if you're like me, you hate that Derek wears his socks to bed, because then whenever I make the bed every day, there they are, the dang socks all over the place. It drives me crazy. Bob, unfortunately, we have run out of time and there are two other big points. I'm hoping we could pick up on this the next time you come on. Would that be okay?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, awesome. Because I want to dive more into this. And Bob, if anyone wants to call you with advice, or they want advice from you rather, where do they go?
Yeah, two ways. One is follow me on Twitter, which is cool, is @marriagecoachBD, or an email to bdonovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, @blackrock.org.
All right, Bob. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Of course.